lucky.
Yay.
You won't hear the other two, but trust me, they were.
We should keep
awful.
Them in as outtakes. People love outtakes.
You got rid of one of them already.
Let's
purge them.
You can have them at the end credits like they do in films nowadays.
Well, after the credits.
That's a really serious film.
The
and
blue
then.
Cream.
Then, you know, then exactly. what wacky cartoon do we
The Schindler's List blooper reel. It's hilarious.
It's the done thing nowadays. You've got to show how they're asking about how they had a great time filming it, even if we didn't have a great time watching it. And then they end on a song. They generally seem to do that. It's the cast rehearsing their lines with the rollers in their hair and all that, doing some crap song from the 80s. That is a done thing, isn't it? In all bad comedies at the minute.
It works.
Anyway,
talking about bad comedies. Here we are. You said it.
Aww.
I thought it was going to be talking about bad comedies. Here's Paul Carenza.
No.
Anyway, I'm Paul Carenza.
Speaking of bad comedy, I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jenny Masters. Yes.
Yes.
It's true.
You seem unsure. I think I am.
I didn't know whether I was Jennifer or Jenny today, you see.
I'll see.
No. Does it depend on your mood?
Yes.
And what mood are you in?
I'm in a Jenny mood.
I'm Steve. I'm Steve today. The operation was a complete success.
Right. Yeah.
Cool. Helicopter. We've got doors.
Creaking. Oh, it's like a haunted house.
It's a traditional British summer with wind and helicopters and snowing. So, welcome to the episode.
Well, yes, it's 94.
Ooh.
I think it was, because it was United 93 last time.
Oh, that's right.
I think. Which was one of the easiest titles I've
That's pretty good, isn't it?
94. There's got to be something 94.
94. Yeah.
I'll work it out.
Generally, it's the.
I'll do what I always do, which is scour the IMDb for the most obscure film I can think of.
Pretty much. And then go for the 94th Academy Awards. The 94th Academy Awards.
We're getting to that sort of stage, to be honest. We're running out of options, but we're going to power through until we have to stop.
And we're not long now, of course, until the big 1-0.
I know. We should do something for that.
What are we going to do?
I think we should do 100th podcast in celebration of
that. That's a good idea.
It's like celebratory and easy.
What. Should we?
We could start planning ahead.
If anyone's got ideas, email in. What
podcast
should we do for the
100th? moviebanter.co.uk.
Should we try and secure that Gemma Archer interview after all these years?
Give it a go.
Very true. Get her to finally step in and replace Jen and spare us all.
I don't think she'd spare any of you.
Oh,
I could comfortably be not spared, but Gemma,
what a way to go. So let us know what we should do. People could email in little 10-second sound things they've recorded saying happy birthday movie banter. All of our listeners, all three of
them. That's true. We can actually say but the people who regularly email in.
Because
we have more listeners than people who email in. But you wouldn't know it from the people who email in. We're very grateful to everyone who emails in. Thank you very much. Because without you, we'd have nothing to read out. But we know there are more of you out there who don't email in.
But it's not a birthday though, is it?
Well, no.
Well,
it's a 100th.
Jubilee. But for media things, you don't have to record. TV shows don't have birthday episodes; they have 100th episodes, 200th episodes.
That's what I'm saying.
1,000th episode.
Yeah. It's a landmark.
Yeah.
Yes.
Except if it's not a landmark, is it? It's not like a little plaque somewhere.
There we can have one.
You're kind of playing it down. It's not. It's not a birthday. It's not a landmark.
It's nothing.
What is
not
it?
It's
just not
nothing. It's nothing. Is what it is.
Oh.
It's not, just thanks to the
utterly meaning
the decimal
just like
counting landmark. System.
Yeah, it's a tribute to
comedies.
I'm going to end it all here now. This is it.
Oh, I'm sorely tempted when editing this just to cut it off there and just put it in a gunshot. Just play that 5-minute podcast ending with Paul killing himself.
But we can't end it there because we've got to talk about
films
things like Hannah and Source Code and Catfish and Something Borrowed.
And Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides.
On Stranger Tides.
They be sea at sea. And all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, bring it on.
Lots of films. Yeah, because Source Code. Saw ages ago, but
we did. We just didn't get time for the last couple of podcasts.
We had too many films.
Run out of time. So
do it now.
Let's do it now.
Let's lead off. It's all right.
With which one?
Next film.
Do you want to do Source Code? Let's do Source Code now. Yeah, why not?
This is Jake Gyllenhaal, directed by Duncan Jones.
Yeah.
Yes.
AKA Zowie Bowie.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't think why he changed his name.
Poor kid.
As soon as he could.
Kind of, what's the polar opposite of Zowie? Duncan. That's what I would be. Duncan.
Duncan Jones. So he made Moon.
He did.
Most famously, which is brilliant. And
we've all made Moon. Normally I have a coach window at a school trip.
I've never made Moon.
Living it off.
No.
Boo.
The coach windows weren't big enough. That's what. Sorry. Had to be done.
We've got a full 5 minutes for that. Apart from Jim Martin and stuff. Jeremy Austin, he did Moon, which was very good.
It's very good. And it seems to sort of crept up, because it Yeah, it was relatively small, but then seems to have built up to be generally known.
A bit like Jen's, I'm not
going to
get that. Sorry. He set me up for it.
Started small and it's now huge and expansive and you can't go anywhere without seeing it. You're just everywhere you look, there's some aspect
Neil
of
Armstrong's
it staring you in
it.
The face.
Some aspect.
I think that's maybe the only time the two words some aspect has got a giggle like that out of anyone. Anyway, but yeah, so Moon now seems to be known by people. It's a very good film. This is a bigger budget follow-up. We've lost Jen. She's gone. Yeah, and the basic, it's sort of, it's a little bit Quantum Leap-y. Only a tiny bit.
Oh, yes, yeah.
In that.
It's got a Quantum Leap cameo as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Sam Beckett's in it. Yeah. Saying, oh boy, as well.
I know, which I didn't pick up on at
the
time.
Fantastic.
With Jay, yeah, the
voice.
Sort of semi-spoiler. He speaks to someone on the phone.
Oh, okay.
And the person he speaks to is Sam Beckett.
Scott Bakula.
Yes.
Really.
Scott Bakula. Bakula.
I don't know.
Bakula.
I did
Bakula.
Not know that. That is.
Yeah.
That
I
is
didn't
amazing.
Know it until when I saw it. But yeah. And he says, "Oh boy," as well.
Yeah.
Yay.
And it was deliberately put in because there is a Quantum Leap, but it's very much its own thing. It's not the idea of Quantum Leap.
I think that Quantum Leap's obviously, you know, a certain amount of cheese and. Japes, whereas this is slightly more
Serious and terrorism based. But also, I was pleased because if you've seen the trailer or if you haven't seen the trailer, the basic premise is Jake Gyllenhaal is a soldier, scientist, military scientist, work out a way to put him sort of get him to relive the last 8 minutes of someone's life. And earlier in the day, there was a bomb on the train. Someone was killed. They think, we can put you into his body. You can relive the last bit of the train. Work out who blew up the train, and then come back to reality. So, all right, fair enough, off we go. Relive 8 minutes, Groundhog Day-ish. But the film is a bit more than that. Mm. But the trailer doesn't give that away, which is good. And it's not a twist. But
I really
just...
thought, seeing the trailer, it was going to be like, it's another one of those films. It's Next with Nicolas Cage, or it's Deja Vu with Denzel Washington. But now it's Jake Gyllenhaal.
Exactly.
But
also
it was better
than
that.
We're going to be seeing 8 minutes over and over and over again. And it's not, not twisting, but it just goes in a... more interesting direction than just that.
But I quite like films where you see the same thing over and over again from different viewpoints. Vantage Point, you see that with Dennis Quaid and others?
I didn't see
that. Good because it was an assassination attempt on the president.
Yes, but with different...
But shown from about five or six viewpoints.
Yes.
And I quite liked it. I think it's just a nice way of presenting a film.
Very neat.
And it shows the effort's gone into it because they've got to think about, we show that thing, how do we make it interesting and different, but at the same point... showing enough things that had similar...
Yeah, and you've got to sort of lead the audience down one way without annoying them.
Exactly.
And then sort of show it. Yeah, and there are aspects of this, and so he sees some people, they go, he's coming out of the bathroom. Is he the bad guy? He looks suspicious. So I'm going to assault him. But because it's 8 minutes, there is a Groundhog Day element to it, so it means that he can beat someone up for information, essentially. And say, why have you done this? And they go, it wasn't you after all. It's all right, you'll forget all this in a few minutes anyway. And can then ignore them.
But obviously there's... was it a time pressure? There's reasons why he can't obviously keep repeating doing it because it takes its toll.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
because if he could do it enough times, as many times as passengers on the train, he could just go, I've got him, and they go, no, it's not him. Oh, okay, I've got another one. Yeah. Here we go.
Well, the time pressure is not so much because of the limitations of the 8 minutes, but it's more that they need to find whoever set off the bomb has a bigger bomb they're going to let off.
That's right.
And so in the real world, time is still ticking, so he can't just play through it billions of times. Because he's got to find the real world killer. But then there's other shenanigans afoot as well. But it all goes in an interesting way.
Yeah, I heard a podcast interview with the writer of it.
Oh, right.
A guy called Ben Ripley, the talented Ben Ripley. And he, because he was working on it long before Duncan Jones came along. Duncan Jones was about the fourth director attached to it. And it was interesting. He said that he wanted to write Source Code simply because he wanted... to do a non-linear script.
Yes.
Right.
And so he wanted to do he saw Groundhog Day and Rashomon and these other sort of films which skip around and thought, I want to do one of those. And just had to, and then work backwards from there to think, how can he do it? And then thought, well, we could do this, sci-fi conceit where you can jump into a body and do it like that. And just interesting hearing about how, because as we see it watching the film, we start off with Jake Gyllenhaal going through it all and then he goes, what the hell was all that? And that was like the 10th draft originally. It was the start off with the actual bomb on the train type thing.
Right.
And then it goes from there. And then we sort of see, we need to put someone in the body of that. And then we need Jake Gyllenhaal. A bit more, so more linear. Even
still.
But you can see, they've made it very interesting, really, just to mix up a bit.
And also, because we don't need to see sort of the whole lead-in to it.
No.
No,
it's more interesting just when he essentially wakes up Because I think it opens on the train, doesn't it? Mm.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up sort of in the machine going, whoa, what? A bit confused because he's just come out of a different body. And they basically say, hey, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
Back you go.
And what a great start to kill off your lead character in the first 8 minutes.
Yes.
And then he wakes up somewhere else. You go, whoa, okay, now I'm interested. This is
exactly
good.
What's going on.
Yeah. And it's actually the fact that he does, obviously, through these 8 minutes cycle, he keeps on dying. I find it really quite tragic and poignant every time it happens.
No, true. Not every time. It does get slightly ground, not comedically Groundhog Day, but once or twice, he knows he can take chances or do things that will endanger him.
Yes.
Because he knows he's going to come out of it.
Oh, yes.
So it doesn't really matter as much. But yes, there are times when, because he always sort of sets his watch, he knows when it's counting down, and he sort of wants to do things, and he kind of thinks, well, you know, I'm going to die now, so I might as well do this. And it's, yes, it can be quite touching.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then, yes, it unfolds in interesting ways, and there's sort of more mystery and intrigue going on.
And there's a lot of chat on the intertubes after about the ending and whether it serves the film well, whether it's too
see I went through a sort of a three stage process with the ending because I got to there's a point just before the ending and I thought it should end there. I really want it to end there and then have credits, and that's a really nice end point which would fit it quite well.
Yeah.
And then it didn't end there, and it carried on. I've pushed it too far now, and now it's a bit too... But then it carried on a bit more. I quite like that. And
it's
actually, they've done well with it. So, yeah, so I ended up quite liking the ending.
But,
I know, because Jen and I disagreed on this, because Jen, you thought it was quite sad.
Yeah.
But I think it's got elements of sadness to it, but it's also... I was more happy.
I'm finding really hard to talk about this without giving away the ending.
It is true.
Well, yes,
fair.
It is
true. But if we're saying it's an ending that's both happy and sad, it could go anywhere.
Well,
really,
could go either way.
Well, it's also a bit immoral. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Well,
it's no more immoral than the start of the film.
In what way immoral?
This is when
this is where I can't say anything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You see?
I think it's no more immoral than the rest of the film has been.
Can we cut a bit out so I can talk to you guys and then...
Right. You speak in code. You say every word backwards.
That
sounds about right.
I don't think it really matters where the actual decaying corpse of the teacher is.
Not really.
Because...
Can we jump back in at that point?
That'll do.
Okay. Well,
we just had a long-winded discussion which we've chopped out for spoiler and boredom reasons.
Yeah. If you've heard two sentences that don't quite fit together and think, what the hell did I miss? Did I blank out for a minute? You didn't. It's just we had a 20-minute discussion about source code, which we can't repeat.
We wanted to jump in at the point of the decaying teacher corpse because it's just quite funny.
Yeah.
It probably deserves, like we did with Inception, an episode
that
says, if you've watched it, you can listen to this podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
If you haven't, don't.
But, true.
Maybe one. I need to watch it again, though, before
I know.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that. It's been quite a while since we've seen it, to be fair.
Yeah, it has. In like 6 weeks, probably.
Oh, yes.
In fact, it's not even on the cinemas anymore.
No. Get on DVD.
DVD it's extremely good. So
watch it. It's very, very good.
Yeah, very good.
It is. I feel we've had a very long discussion, and I'm now slightly worried that all that we've talked about has actually been chopped out.
On the podcast, I'm going, come on!
I think we've covered the basics.
We've got some opinions. Let's read some opinions. Yes. Jed says, source code, the pleasant surprise is that the movie is genuinely uplifting, hopeful and heartwarming at the end. The message of making every second count very much at its core. A well-rounded, wholly entertaining piece of filmmaking. Source code crackles with pulse-pounding energy, is capable of delivering a warm, fuzzy feeling or two. Intelligent, entertaining, pacey, even heartwarming. Drink this straight from the source.
Nice.
Richard Berryman says, source code, enjoyed it, but was annoyed by the ending. You see, the flip side, the yin and the yang. Won't say anything in case you haven't seen it, but it was just disappointing, to say the least, and meant I left disliking the film much more than I did 10 minutes before.
No, see, I don't see that.
Or 8 minutes before.
Well, yeah.
Exactly.
No, see, I don't see that, because it's... I think if it didn't have... Yeah, well, what I was saying about sort of when you go, hey, I think if it had ended just on the bit, then I thought, it's a little bit too wrapped up too neatly.
Yeah.
The fact that it adds on, you know, essentially saying, oh no, we've not forgotten about everything we talked about in the film, this lot's still going on, makes you think, okay, they've thought about the ending.
Yeah.
And it's not even bittersweet as such, it is both happy and sad in different ways.
I like the film, really.
Yeah.
I just love your technical terms for these things.
You've got to have a degree of tonality to it.
Yeah.
I think so. Though I did hear one reviewer talk about the ending a bit like, do you know, you've seen Brazil?
Obviously, yes.
Brazil. Do you know there's this other alternate ending that was that the studio wanted to put out, and I think they did put out to start with, and showed it around a few cinemas.
Oh, yes.
It's called The Love Conquers All Ending. Because if you haven't seen Brazil and want no spoilers, then switch off for 20 seconds. Oh. But it's, the actual ending is quite dark, that's all I'll say.
Yes.
And the studio went, we can't have that, we need a happy ending. So they did a new, they re-edited it themselves. Did a Love Conquers All ending, much more happy and upbeat. And Terry Gilliam went, no, and then switched it back to the dark ending. Mm. And there was talk with Source Code that that's kind of what they've done here, that they've made it like an upbeat, kind of bittersweet, heartfelt, heartwarming ending. At the expense of the darker ending it could have had. But I think that's wrong because it still had, like you said earlier, they still had moments of poignant, kind of, it was sad still.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because you think, well, it's good, but you've actually still, you know.
Yeah, it's not a pure happy ending because it's sort of, what happiness there is comes at a price and the sort of sadness stuff is still going on. But so, I don't know, it has elements of both to it. So, I think, I think as a result, that may be why some people will take away, no, it's too happy, I don't like it. Others say, oh, it's too sad, it's depressing. Yeah. But, yeah. But
please go and watch it, and then we can talk about it properly.
Exactly. Well, we'll come back to it on a future date when the DVD is out.
Yes.
Good.
Pirates 4.
Should we do Pirates 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. Big new release. Shiver my timbers. Watch the cabin boy.
See, Jen likes it. Mainly because of Johnny Depp, because she's now lost in her own little world.
Oh, dear.
No.
See,
I just like pirates.
Okay.
Steady on.
Oh, hello. So what, Somali pirates or video pirates? Which
Copyright theft, is that what you're depriving people of their livelihood? Is that what you want?
Hey, you know, I don't approve illegal copies of anything. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
What do you say, I know that, as if it's one of your driving forces in life? I don't
like you have a charity.
Well, I used to have a boyfriend who regularly copied films and I would lecture every time.
That's true. Yeah, you still borrowed them though, didn't you?
No.
Yeah, you did.
Not the proper ones, but he had them all on his computer.
Oh, I see.
Yes,
I came around to your house while he was away and you had a big thing full of them.
Well,
only to report to the authorities.
Well, yes, that's very true.
It is, you see. Yeah.
No, you had like DVD sleeves with lots of blank CDRs, dodgily bought, copied things that you borrowed off him. Anyway, we're getting into another discussion.
I saw a pirated film once. It turned out it was a pirated film only suitable for children over 3.14.
Well done.
That's brilliant.
It's not my joke. On Stranger Tides.
Stranger Tides.
Well, yes, it's slightly pointless.
Because nowhere in the film did they go, oh, look, we're on Stranger Tides now.
Yeah, because what was the subtitle of the second one?
Curse of the
Black Pearl. Curse of the
Black Pearl's End.
No, At World's End is the third one. Curse of the Black Pearl is the first one.
Curse of the Black Pearl.
Can you look it up, Bob? Because we're going to be here forever. No, because Curse of the Black Pearl is the first one.
Yeah.
And it's all about the Curse of the Black Pearl. What's the second one?
Oh, sorry. At World's End,
I think it's the third one. And that takes place at World's End, so that
is
makes
it
sense.
Is it about the locker? Davy Jones' locker?
Dead Man's Chest.
See, that makes a degree of sense as well, because it's sort of about Davy Jones and all that lot. But on Stranger Tides, it's just a bit generic.
Well, no, hang on. Well, also, because if you think about it, with all the water and the fact that at the end, everything's strange.
Yeah, no, but that's not a tide, though. That's just water. But, I mean, you can make it make sense, but it's not as logical. The other
Citizens on Patrol would have been much better.
Yeah, well, but it's just a little bit. I mean, they could have called it The Fountain of Youth.
Exactly.
Well, that the whole film is about The Fountain of Youth.
But the thing is, that's the logical thing, and I believe that's what it was. That was the working title, which is probably why they changed it, because probably find that, I don't know, someone was
bored. I don't like it now.
Well, no, some executive wanted to make his mark.
Well, no, kind of that people were already, I don't know, pirating stuff or had the domain name of, you know, Curse of the Fountain of the Death of the Youth, whatever it was, I can't remember. All that stuff. So that's why they went for
it. Well, possibly. I don't know. It's a minor niggle, but it's just a bit pointless. But yeah, ultimately, it's, on many levels, it's more of the same for all the good and bad that entails.
They talk about it, the stuff being the start of a new trilogy.
Possibly.
No, well, that's what I think that was maybe. Definitely left open. For
yeah,
it.
I think they are. Well, yeah, but is it going to be? Will it be more of a trilogy, or is there just a series of two?
I
more
think they're looking to make a 5 and a 6, which will be separate films, not overlapping particularly.
Yeah, which I think is a good thing. I think that's partly where 2 and 3 got a bit bogged down. Which was fine. I didn't mind 2 or 3. I didn't mind this, but it's. Nor was I thrilled. The first one was sort of hooray, and the second 2, 3, and 4 are a little bit sort of
I disagree. I think maybe expectations changed and the standards were slightly different, but all in all, they're a really good romp. I really like this film. I think, obviously, there are niggles, things that I would change. I honestly, to be honest, Penelope Cruz, even though she's beautiful, I'm not sure how strong her character actually was.
I quite like really that, actually. Because she's kind of a slightly female Jack Sparrow.
Well, obviously, that's what they were trying to do right from the off, but I didn't believe that she was a particularly strong pirate.
No,
to be honest.
Right. She's made not brilliant, but... sort of your trickster character, wasn't she? Kind of, is she good? Is she bad? Whose side is she on? Mm. Is she lying to him?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, but none of the characters have a huge amount to do. I think that's the slight thing that annoys. It's all a little bit with the plot. You know, this needs to happen in the plot, so we're all going to do this. Mm. And Johnny Depp livens it up by making Jack Sparrow interesting. But all the other characters, even Blackbeard, who's Ian McShane, new addition to the... They're all just a little bit generic
It's a pirate film. I thought actually him as Blackbeard was very good. I did not.
No, it's not bad, but it's just nothing special. Johnny Depp as a Jack Sparrow as a character is quite interesting and unusual, and you know, is animated facially and adds comedy to it. Mm-mm. None of the other characters are. They're all just sort of your job is to be a pirate and go.
There's no surprises, are there?
No,
that's the thing.
I think it needed probably a bit more definition, a few more peaks and troughs. You know, all the way
through. I noted there were three scenes I liked in it. One was the mermaids with the boat thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was quite good because, there's a bit of tension and then they're there and, they're all right.
And the idea of vicious mermaids as well, which is
quite good. Yeah. And the other one I liked was most of the stuff with Johnny Depp and Kevin McNally as Mr. Gibbs. They were quite good.
I think that's just a little bit of sparky dialogue.
Time you see him, it's they're always good fun.
And they're just good relationship.
When Johnny Depp and Jeffrey Rush are both tied up.
Yeah, that was a well-written, funny scene as well.
Best thing is when there's examples of well-written stuff, it's good. And when it's all just, you know, here is the action thing that needs to happen. Well, but it's just a bit soulless.
I think the stuff that I really liked was when it just stopped for a minute. And when those two tied to a tree, or where there's Gibbs and Jack Sparrow catching up.
Yeah.
Just when it stops, it was better.
But it's when you get to have a bit of fun with the characters, essentially.
Yeah, because the other scene I really liked was... when they're plotting to take over the ship, and there's Jack Sparrow's got everyone around and saying, "Now has anyone seen Blackbeard?" And they're just the whole mumbling idea of them all going, "Oh no, he's never got out of his cabin. He's got out of his cabin. He hasn't got out of his cabin." So he's never got out of his cabin. No, he hasn't. just one bloke at the end about a 10 second behind everyone else. That was really nicely done, I thought.
It was never dull.
Yeah.
I think I just wanted a bit more. Mm. And there are also some moments that are genuinely funny, but all because of Johnny Depp.
And I was half expecting that other sailor, the musical chap.
Yes.
Webber?
The guy with the guitar.
The guy with the... What was his name?
I can't remember.
Smudge or... No.
He's the... When Johnny Depp first comes into the pub to sort of track down his imposter, he's the first pirate he talks to. Yeah. He's playing guitar.
Oh, Scrum.
Scrum. There you go. Yeah.
Yes, because he crops up a few times. Well, he doesn't have a huge amount to do, though.
I've seen him in something else. I think it was This Is England.
He was in that.
Playing a really vindictive skinhead. And
he's a very good actor.
In this, he's really quite likeable.
Yeah, that was good. I thought he was all right. But I thought just generally, I thought some elements were good, but overall, a bit unsatisfying.
This is a slightly unfavourable comparison, but the film that kept occurring to me was The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, or whichever one it was, which was the third one, which was sort of had all the necessary elements, and like there was a big action, and it was all very good. But I was just left thinking, I don't really care.
Mm.
And that's a bit slightly too harsh for this, because with this I cared more.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it's mainly because of Johnny Depp, and they just need to bulk up the other characters to make them more interesting.
Mm.
Mm.
And slightly less just sort of going from action scene to action scene.
Yeah.
And a little bit more personality.
Having said that, it did remind me a lot of Indiana Jones and...
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
No, sorry. Temple the Holy Grail.
Holy Grail,
yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Monty Python.
No. which one of those two films? Is it? Which one of those four or five films? It reminds you of one of two completely
different
films.
It reminded me of a film.
Well done.
I remember those films.
But when with the Indiana Jones, when he takes the sip of the chalice and everything all decays, it's quite...
Point towards the end.
Definitely the end.
That was
and actually at that
Jonesy.
Point, because it seemed was so reminiscent of that, I thought, of course, this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to make these a film franchise like as good as that was.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, but you've failed throughout the whole franchise. I don't think has ever got close to the original three in it.
No, I think the first one, I think, had a lot.
The first one was not bad, but I still think I'd much rather watch one of the first three in Indiana Jones films than a Pirates film.
Yes.
Because the Pirates film was just a bit too. They've added like double the amount of characters. They've got it's just too much stuff going on. It's just all a bit messy. I think just trim it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Half the budget,
and also,
you can make a much better
degree,
film.
The supernatural stuff, some of it. Some of it, like the idea of J.D. Jones being supernatural, sort of works. Mm. But in this, Blackbeard can control the rigging of his ship, which is it's almost a bit unnecessary. And it's sort of it's a power he doesn't need.
It's a bit odd, isn't it? It's weird. Just lazy.
Yes, and he's got a couple of zombies just there. Yeah. Just
and the fact that he wasn't actually a real person makes it.
Yeah.
If it was maybe someone else completely,
who also because this is just a mistake someone submitted, which this is set during the reign of King George II, who reigned from. And Blackbeard had already been dead for about 10 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
I've heard them say that.
And obviously, this isn't. Yes, he was famously killed by
Fountain
someone
of
else.
Youth, though. He had the Fountain of Youth. Yeah.
And obviously, it's not a documentary. But you'd have thought, why, if you're going to use real people, you might as well. Why not make it in the reign of King George I or whoever the king was at that point?
I mean, hear him say that all the Pirates films have been set between 1720 and 1760, I think.
Right.
Just broadly in the area without specifying a date. Into apparently this one, though, they have said is 1750.
Right. So I don't know. Fair enough. And I think that is when George II was in power, I think.
Okay.
I think Blackbeard died something like 1790.
Maybe it's a different Blackbeard. A lot of different people have got Blackbeard too.
Well, possibly.
And Ian McShane had a grey beard in this one, so he was not even Blackbeard.
But it's just a slightly
it would have been
odd.
Black at one point, okay. In his heyday, making his mark.
Yeah. Hey, ladies. A little quick swizzle on the black beard.
But yeah. No, that's right.
And what about every shaves? What's it called then?
Black stubble.
Black stubble. That's quite nice. I like that. That's going to work. Yeah. Formerly Blackbeard. The artist formerly known as Blackbeard. Now known as Smooth.
But yeah, I mean, it's fine. People still go and see it.
And I hate the 3D.
I deliberately went to a 2D showing.
I tried to
go to 2D. I persuaded Jen to go and see a 2D showing.
And then I was too late for the 2D. So. No. And because of the thing, I went, this is Cineworld in Milton Keynes, rock and roll. And they had three showings during the whole day of 2D.
Right.
And they had every 15 to 20 minutes throughout the day was 3D. And I just, please, put on more. Just give us one of your 3D screens. Give us 2D.
These now, you can actually buy 2D glasses, which are 3D glasses, because 3D glasses work because they've got polarised lenses in different ways.
Yeah.
And these, they're very cheap, they're just a couple of quid, but they have the polarised lenses the same way. So for people who get headaches in 3D, you can just put these on, and it'll still be slightly darker, but it essentially just cuts out, because 3D is just two frames overlapped, and it cuts out one of them completely, so you just see one frame.
Oh.
So you don't get any 3D effect, but equally you don't get the headaches or anything else.
Well, the main problem I found was just the darkness. I kept taking the glasses off, going, it's too dark. And it's a dark film anyway, because a lot happens at night and all that.
Yeah.
And so for those bits, I had to do that, because I saw characters on screen going, look out! And I go, I can't see what it is.
Yeah.
That you can, and the 2D people can, but us...
Yeah,
you know,
see, it's bothered me in Thor as well, because I went to see Thor again, because it was fun. Yeah. And Jen wanted to lust at Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
And reminded the scene at the start, near the start, where they attack the frost giants, is all at night. And I kept sort of moving glasses out, and it was very gloomy. And then you move it, oh no, I can see everything. Yeah. And it's just, it's annoying.
I still quite like it. Yeah. I really like quite a dark film, to be honest.
No, I don't mind a dark film.
It's just too dark.
But the point is that the 3D takes a film that is dark and then makes it dark.
Darker.
It makes it too dark.
Yeah.
Which just is a bit pointless.
It
pays more for something that I could do. It costs more for something I could do without.
Well, also, I'd rather pay more to watch a 2D film. If they said you've got to pay extra $150 to watch it, I'd pay that.
Yeah.
I would. But I saw last episode. I hadn't seen.
The trouble with saying that is that studios may just try that as a marketing technique. 3D films are now cheaper. 2D films are more expensive, and they'll make a killing.
That's fair enough. Anyway. I'd do it.
I saw Thor.
Since we last had an episode, so I hadn't seen it then.
Okay, it's a good film,
quick being good. But I nearly got kicked out of the cinema because I was late. When I was there on time, right?
Aww.
And then because they've got this thing now in Cineworld in the daytime where they close all the tills and you've got to buy it from the popcorn counter.
Yeah, they're doing that.
Odeon's doing that.
Yeah, it's so annoying because then I would have made it to the front of the queue first. But I went and queued at the proper place and saw it was closed. And then in the meantime, this one couple I was trying to beat from the car park got there just before me and then spent ages going, oh, yeah, we'll have Do you want a cup of tea? I'll have a cup of coffee. For crying out loud, just buy some popcorn and go. And they took about 10 minutes to order their food. I just wanted one little ticket.
Yeah.
So I went for the 2D version of Thor and then missed the first quarter of an hour. But I just saw the 3D film was just starting next door. So I thought, I'll go in there. Mm. And the manager came in and he spotted me and he asked for a ticket and all that. I felt a bit belittled. Oh. But he didn't get me out, thankfully, because I just sort of said, well, I just wanted to see the first 10 minutes.
Well,
held up
details.
Due to your lack of staff.
And he said, well, you can pay £2 to see. I went, £2 for the... It's only Thor. It's not worth it. I'll pick it up. And she said to him, do you know what happened? Have you seen Thor? Do you know what happened to the first 10 minutes? Can you just tell me? No, sir. Screen 8. Oh, thanks.
Okay. Thanks very much.
So,
thing is also, because it may happen in the cinema, in the Odeon, they've got automated ticket machines, which are great, makes a lot of sense, except that you can't choose where you want to sit. And I like sitting in the same place, which is quite near the front, because if you sit right at the back, then it's basically just a big TV. And what's the point?
Creature of habit.
Well, yeah. Well, no, it's not just creature of habit. There's a reason. I must sit in the same place for OCD. There's a reason I want to do it.
It's OCD.
Not OCD. It's like saying, oh, you always have your tea hot, you creature of habit. Well, there's a reason. But
LCD, isn't it?
Yeah. But as a result, this means that you can't. You put your thing in and it just automatically says, right, you're going to sit here. Well, I don't want to sit there. Well, you're going to. So, yeah, it's irritating.
Can't you just sit where you want anyway? Buy a ticket for B7 and then go and sit
in C4? Actually, but then there might be someone there. Oh. I suppose you could just sit around there and hope it's not busy, which it probably isn't in the middle of the day. But it's not ideal.
Some cinemas do that.
And also, I think if anyone takes longer than about a minute to buy a cinema ticket, you should have the right to kick them out of the way and go first.
Yeah.
If people turn up, especially when it's busy, and just get to the front of the queue and just start saying, right, what are we going to see? I don't know. Can you explain the plot of all of these 17 films? No!
Look, that's what they have the big notice boards and the big,
And multi-million pound advertising campaigns before a film.
And if you're going to buy your confectionery at the same time as your ticket, and you know there's a queue behind you, then don't, just fine, buy something, absolutely. But don't go, right, I want that bit of popcorn there, just that little bit of sweet popcorn, and then that one from that one down there. And just, please, just get a
just
bloody
just think
movie.
About it before you get there.
I know. This is cinema rage.
Well, it is. Yeah. But the idea, it's just the idea of something. And I know, obviously, I and we are more cinema obsessive than most people, but I just can't comprehend the idea of people who will go to a cinema just thinking, I want to see something. I don't know anything about any of them, but I want to throw £20 at some form of entertainment, and I'm just going to take a gamble completely on what it
is. You know what? It could be a lovely old couple, like your grandparents, going out for a date and just not knowing. No, and yes, they should hurry
that
up.
That makes them idiots, yeah. Exactly.
No, it doesn't make them idiots.
It does make them idiots. My parents very rarely go to the cinema, but when they do, it's because they've seen a trailer for a film, they go, oh, we want to see that, that looks good. So they go to the cinema and they go, all right, we want to see this.
I don't think we should really be dissuading non-regular cinema goers from going to the cinema.
No, I'm not dissuading them from not going to the cinema, but just maybe if you're going to go to the cinema, have a think about what you might want to see before you get to the very front of the queue and start talking to the ticket seller.
Quite often, though.
Maybe just before you get to the front of the queue, think,
have a rough idea.
Work it over.
I've often
head.
Gone to the cinema though, just at like 2 o'clock or something, and then just thought I'll see whatever.
Yeah,
whatever's on. Yes. You know. But I'm not gonna have a big hot conversation at the front saying, no. "Oh, but we're like, oh, we're like that. What happens?
Yeah,
you know,
what is it?
And I want that bit of popcorn.
On the left. No, put the right. That changed. Empty it out. Start again. Anyway, yes.
Shall we move on?
Just ranting.
Shall we move on?
Move on to Hannah. Awesome emails.
We've got three more films and an email still.
Yeah. Something borrowed won't take long. It'll basically be me throwing up.
Do you want to do something borrowed then, very quickly? Blurt it out now.
Oh, yes. No, throwing up is a bit harsh. The reviews of this have been dreadful. And I was almost hoping for something worse than it was, in a weird way. There are three types of rom-com. There's average, which is a huge middle ground. Most rom-coms fit into, you know what you're going to get. You get it. You know, a few laughs. They get together. And then there are some really, really good ones. Sort of your Four Weddings and Love Actuallys and others. Mm. And there are some dreadful, boring, turgid, horrible things. Like The Wedding Planner. Mm. One of them. Accidental Husband. Which is just dull. And I don't know how they can be dull. Because it's a rom-com. You should know what you're getting.
Yeah.
So you sort of go in with limited expectations. And I was almost hoping this was going to be a new, dull film, and it's not. It's just at the bottom end of average, I think.
Have you seen it?
It's quite scathing, isn't it? Is it? Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
See, it's not okay.
But
it's
not correctly stated.
It's gonna, because it's bare, it's not really a rom-com.
Yeah, it's
which,
not really
which
that
is
comedic.
Sort of in its favour, slightly, because it's not like it tries lots of jokes that fall flat.
No.
It's more of a slightly romantic drama with a few quirky.
I wouldn't say it's a comedy.
No.
Not because it tried and failed. It's just it's not there.
No. Yeah. I mean, the basic premise is you've got Jennifer Goodwin.
Oh, yes.
Jennifer, yes.
Not like you, not a Jennifer.
Not Jennifer.
Not a normal one.
Jennifer. Weird one.
Yeah.
Misspelling. And Kate Hudson and nameless love interest man who I couldn't
remember. Sure, he has a name.
Basically, I thought it may have been picked up from some sort of catalogue, but, you know, as in he's very catalogue model looking.
Yes.
But he was actually quite good.
Yeah, no, he was all right. The basic premise is that Jennifer Goodwin has been friends with this guy for years. Mm. Kate Hudson sort of met him. Jennifer Goodwin is too afraid to make a move on him, so said to Kate Hudson, yes, you can date him, and now they're getting married, and then, but there's tension and hilarity ensues. Except it doesn't really.
That's the problem.
And John Krasinski, who's in the US version of The Office and has been in other stuff, plays Jennifer Goodwin's best friend. Yes.
Mm. And it's quite nice the fact that it wasn't completely predictable.
No, it wasn't. That's the thing. When all the characters are first laid out, I thought and was near certain, I know what's going to happen. And it's hardly a spoiler, but I won't ruin exactly what happens. No, but you can kind of There's one of two.
Stop us seeing this film.
Basically, there's one of two ways it's going to go. And if you're a rom-com watcher, you'll think it's going to go way A, but it's actually way B.
Way A.
Well, come Geordie.
Yes. But essentially, all of the jokes come from John Krasinski, and I was I was basically waiting for him to keep coming back on screen because he is by far the most interesting, entertaining character.
I thought that Kate Hudson was refreshingly different, though, because she plays actually quite a nasty character.
Yeah, but again, quite nicely, nuancedly, because she's not a sort of a cartoonish nasty character.
No.
And she is friends with Jennifer Goodwin, and because they're friends, she's kind of the type A personality, and Jennifer Goodwin is this slightly put-upon friend. But, yeah, she's not absolutely horrible. She's just sort of a bit self-centred and a bit unaware of thing, doesn't really care that she's unaware.
And maybe a borderline alcoholic.
Well, yes, that's true as well. She's always drinking, which they don't really refer to, but she just is always drinking.
It's because she's the party girl, you see.
Yes, but again, towards the end, she does at least acknowledge of her personality flaws and sort of says, "No, I just sort of assume everything will work out."
Paul? I can see the look on his face.
That's it. I mean, it's
You had me at hello, to be honest.
Well, yeah, it is.
Had me
I'm hearing words, but all I'm hearing is.
Pretty much. Which, I mean, it's fine. If it's on TV, you could do worse, but
you could do something else. That's
well,
the thing.
Yes, you know? Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, if you're... There are much better rom-coms out there. And John Krasinski was a very good addition. It does feel a little bit like someone wrote the script and someone read it and just thought, it's a bit dull. Can you inject a funny best friend character? Mm. And so he was just kind of written in to kind of be a counterpoint to Kate Hudson, but also just to liven it up a bit and keep it all moving.
Mm.
And as a result, it works quite well.
Yeah. Now I just really want to go and see Four Days and a Funeral, though.
Well, yes, I think, it's just meh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Should we do some emails?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Hannah.
Yes.
And we could always save Catfish for another day.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Because, you know. Because it was out 6 months ago anyway.
Well, so,
yes, I think we should do that.
Not just an old film, which we just all haven't seen.
So we'll do, if you've seen Catfish, then,
In fact, go and see Catfish, so we can talk about it in the full length.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
So we'll do emails first, and then we'll do some Hannah, and then we'll pretend this never happened.
And then we'll apparently die in a fire, which is what...
What?
Oh, no, Diff. Yes, Desert Island Flicks.
Desert Island Flicks, that's right. Which we're doing best...
Child killer,
but not child killer.
Yes, not
killer
of children.
Is a child.
Yes.
Killer child.
Who may possibly also kill children.
Want to make that very clear.
Yes. Not the best real life serial murderer of children.
No, exactly.
Which would be a little bit dark. It's
got a lot to explain in the title of this Desert Island Flicks. But anyway, that's to come. Still to come. So stay tuned, kids.
Yes.
Killer kids. Email
from Jed for talking about Water for Elephants, which I haven't yet seen it's meant to be all right.
Well, it's a TV movie, but
it looks a little bit too overwrought for me personally.
It looks like one of the few films that I could watch and my wife would stomach.
Right,
so,
that's why you're keen to see it.
I think so.
But Jed said, a sweeping and immersive historical drama, Water for Elephants is somewhat crippled by Robert Pattinson's distinct lack of leading man chops, sideburns, but has Christoph Waltz, an elephant, to save the day. See, Christoph Waltz, I would like to see.
He's a watchable person.
Stuff, yeah. But I think just the whole concept just looks a little bit to me. But yeah. I'm sure it's good.
I mean, but, no. Circus films don't really work, do they?
No, not especially.
Mark Loveday. Now, I was going to watch this film. I wasn't.
Yeah.
It's been in the cinemas for a couple of weeks now.
Yes, I'm still keen to see it.
I think I can't be bothered because I've seen the trailer and it's the film Attack the Block, which I believe has been done some business stateside as well.
Yes, it's true. Yes. Well, it's been at festivals. I don't know if it's opened fully.
I don't know, but it's had some viewings,
yes,
I believe.
But has had phenomenally good reviews.
Yeah, very good
across
reviews.
Across the board.
But I just saw the trailer and it's all just... The thing is, it's lots of kids going blap, blap, blap. And the thing is, I get enough of that at
using
home.
The word blood and saying
I know and I know
you get enough
I
of
understand
that at home?
I do well on the streets of Guildford
on the wild
ghetto.
And crazy
and the thing is I've seen interviews with the director and I take the point that this is the new language of some of the youth today and you've got to embrace it
there is that culture
but I don't like it. And I can't be asked. It doesn't like it. I don't want to see it.
It clashes.
Speak proper English.
It clashes with your suburban Surrey viewpoint.
They had landed in the wrong place, blood. Oh, just shut up. Just go to school. So I'm sounding quite right wing. But anyway,
you're a father now. I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
You immediately shift several points to the right.
I'll go and get a job. Mark Loveday saw it then and said, "Saw Attack the Block." Yesterday, very good film, an old-fashioned style horror movie, harking back to the original Romero zombie films. Being as the film's making an interesting social commentary about the types of people living in South London council flats, it has some funny moments. It's in no way a Shaun of the Dead style comedy. Mm. Excellent acting from a young group of actors. Wonder if the Americas will view the language like we do for The Wire.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like the fact his last line then is, how about favourite carry-on film for Desert Island Flicks? As if that's related to the email. Like, oh yeah, attack the block. Yeah. Carry on attacking the block.
That's I know there was talk about having subtitles for an American audience.
Mm.
Although there was for Trainspotting as well, and I think they ended up not bothering.
I think they didn't, yeah.
Because, less so about Trainspotting, but I know with this, the director said that they deliberately... So they put in certain turns of phrase... to get the feel of language that's used in London Council Estates, but didn't overuse it. They sort of brought it in slowly and in context.
Yeah.
So you should be able to work out what they're talking about, even if it's not always obvious. But I can't imagine it's anything too radical.
No,
that'd be a bit weird.
It would have been quite funny if in Trainspotting they had the subtitles taken from the original text.
Oh, right, yes.
Because it would have been
so the subtitle, yeah.
So
it wouldn't help you much.
No,
really.
Not really. No, if anything, it would just confuse you more.
Yeah.
Also an email from Chris Sands, which really confused me when the email first came in. It said C. Sands, and my mum's name is Carol. So I thought, it's from my mum. So I really they're talking about films. Doesn't seem like her at all. But yes. With regard to speculation on how the film Arthur ends, it does end with credits rolling, but after that there's a short scene where Arthur meets Nick Fury, is invited to join the Avengers. This only happens in the original film, as Russell Brand was unable to commit to the filming schedule. With all these plugs, the Avengers had better be good. Yeah, I think that'd be an interesting addition to the Avengers.
I was thinking the other day, actually, about, obviously, the Avengers is, going to be these four films. Is it four films? Five, including Iron Man 2,
there's so many characters, but yeah, it's Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, okay. Hulk.
Hulk is the four, isn't it?
I think it's those four, yeah.
Well, I was thinking you could, it's quite a fun game to just think of any four random films from the last couple of years and take the lead characters and put them in a new film. I was thinking Liam Neeson from Unknown would be quite good.
Right.
And
Liam Neeson from Taken.
Yeah, two Liam Neesons.
Aslan from Narnia.
No.
And Qui-Gon Jinn.
There you go. What a film.
Hell of a film.
Go to work, CGI bods. There we go. Really? Get something out of that one.
Not least because, Aslan will be killed early on, but then come back at the end. Qui-Gon Jinn will be killed early on and not come back at the end. That simplifies things.
And then the other two Liam Neesons just wander around Europe killing random foreigners.
One of whom doesn't know who he's looking for, and the other one doesn't know who he is.
Yeah, they are.
We're just crazy.
What a film.
That's a film I'd watch.
I think I'd pay money for that.
Let's do it.
Good. That leaves us with Hannah. Should we do Hannah quickly?
Yes.
And which is the film by Joe Wright, who did Atonement and Pride and Prejudice.
And something else.
Yes.
I don't know what.
I can't remember what it's called now, but there was a film.
You've all got the internet, you can look it up yourself.
What's the thing?
The cellist.
The soloist.
What?
The soloist.
Soloist.
That's right.
What? Oh, that was a priceless mime act going on there.
You got it.
Exactly. What are you laughing at me saying the cellist? That made perfect sense.
It was about the cello. You know, the
for listeners at home, Paul was miming
and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah,
about a cello. And
I never got to see that.
No one did. It did.
Well, it wasn't. Well, I think you're actually miming more the double bass. Isn't the cello like between the legs?
Yeah.
Whereas you were sort of off to one side.
I was a little bit there. I was in fact just...
He was actually...
I was playing someone else's cello. Someone else
I saw a Roman phalanx where you all like attacked to one side.
A who?
Not a phalanx.
Yeah. not playing that.
It's a very popular instrument.
Well, not someone else's. Meanwhile,
anyway,
Joe Wright, who has made these films.
Yes.
And just like Pride and Prejudice and Atonement...
It's this all about a highly trained hit girl.
Yeah, exactly. So he thought, right, they're not working. Yeah. Best make Hannah.
Keira Knightley puts on a petticoat and goes merging her way around.
But it is the girl on Atonement, isn't it?
Yes. Saoirse Ronan?
I think it's Saoirse, isn't it?
Really?
Saoirse Ronan Keating. For whom life is a roller coaster.
No.
Just going to ride it.
Stop it.
Just like the phalanx. Anyway, yes. She plays a hit girl.
Yes. Well, I think a girl who's sort of been trained up to be a hit girl.
Trained up by her dad, Eric Banner, in the forests of Norway or something like that. And, so he's clearly been training all of her.
Would his grandmother be Eric Banner's nana?
Eric Banana.
Who ironically is allergic to fruit. Anyway.
Banana.
We're going off to this is the banter portion of the podcast.
It's the banana ad.
Well done. anyway, being trained up by
it's all right, it's all right,
yeah, but she's raised in sort of living in the forest, and he's a CIA or some sort of hitman on the run.
Yeah,
and Kate Blanchett is clear. There's this implication that she is a bit like the Terminator, but a non-science fiction Terminator.
Yes.
And that she will not rest until...
Yeah, she's going to hunt them down. We're never entirely quite sure why.
No.
But it's left... You can form your own opinions.
Well, no, I think you are told why, but...
It's explained in a... Yes. The end sort of thing tells you.
Yes. But I think her specific devotion to it isn't entirely explained.
I think it's meant to be in the character, but it's not quite there because it's not that well written.
No, well, I think it's left deliberately a little bit there. Well, because quite early on, she's talking to other high-up CIA people, and some of them basically say, oh, let's just not bother. And she essentially says, no, we've got to do this.
Yeah.
And my point is just that she seemed more personally driven than anyone else connected to it.
And I got the feeling it had her previous connection with Eric.
Oh, yeah, but it's not... No, I don't.
Does it need to be spelled out?
It's meant to be backstory. No, I'm not saying an obsessive character.
Yes.
I guess.
No, I'm not saying. It has
really
to be spelled.
It's really beautifully illustrated with the teeth. I thought that was really great. Yeah. That they kept on coming back.
Oh yeah. No, I'm not saying it has to be spelled out. But that's the point. I mean, that's just an aspect of the film is that we're not explicitly told. He killed her children and shows he's getting revenge.
I just think that's my problem with the film. I enjoyed it most of it, but I did feel that the whole reveal and the twist and all that stuff towards the end was rather hastily done. And we go, oh, that's what it's all about. Okay, and then it finished. No. And I'd rather it being a bit more...
My only side criticism, I'd say it's slightly too long. There's a little bit where... Because Hannah's on the run. Eric Banner is trying to find... Or trying to sort of meet up with her, but also trying to escape people. Other people are trying to catch them both. And there's slightly too many events of... Oh, they're over there. All right, let's all go over there. Yeah. Oh, now they're there. Let's go over there. Oh, now they're gone there. All right, let's just go there. Yeah. And it's slightly, there's sort of one too many of those steps, especially when they go to it's not a twist, but I won't. They go to a point and they go, right, oh, we've got to move on somewhere else. They can move somewhere else. And then they come back to the first point.
Mm. And why don't you stay there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look
yeah,
out.
I did enjoy it, but there are just that thought occurred to me. I think it maybe 10, 15 minutes shorter, just a little bit tightened up.
I must admit, the ending, even though it was beautifully done, was a little bit... The poetry of all the visuals was just a bit laboured.
It was, I felt that. Of all the places we could pick to have a final shootout type of thing, they chose there.
And the fact that, we get that, because obviously they're mirroring something that happened right at the beginning of the film, and
lost youth themes and all that sort of stuff. It's a little bit heavy-handed, I thought.
Mm. Yes.
But telling that Joe Wright is more of a director of serious heartfelt films.
Yeah.
And then now he's suddenly doing an action film, so he's adding all this heartfelt, emotional stuff to an action film.
And it's not enormously action-y.
It was in general, very good. It's just at the end, you're there going, oh, okay, all right, yeah, we're tired of this now.
Yeah.
It's been a bit too long for it. Having said that, I thought one of the highlights of the film was the British family.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they were quite annoying.
Because Hannah is a girl, yeah. Hannah's been raised by her father alone her entire life, and she's now meant to be 14... ish. I don't know how old she is.
Yeah, 15,
something like that. 15, but yeah, early mid-teens. And has never really essentially met another person. And then it's suddenly sort of by her own decision, but also eventually thrown out into the world and then meets this family. And so is trying to understand the world. Mm. And it's, you know, she knows, she's been taught by her father about things and from an encyclopedia, but it's just an interesting seeing her trying to get by and being very confused by some things while having absolute knowledge of the other things. Yeah, it makes for an interesting juxtaposition.
And then to meet the daughter of this family who's a typical annoying 15-year-old girl.
Yes.
I think, was she in Tamara Drew?
I haven't seen it.
So oh.
I think she could be there.
Yeah, and she was wonderfully precocious and really well done. And the whole family was...
Yeah, Olivia Williams was the mum in it.
Yeah.
It was very, very nicely annoying, because Olivia Williams is normally the sort of the R character in any film. And yeah, there's a bit of that in this, but mostly go, oh, you annoying hippie.
Yes, she's a little bit. She's a sort of middle class hippie.
Yeah.
Yes.
But also with her husband, who or the dad of the girl,
who is the voice of reason.
Yes, who is sort of slightly and basically puts up with his wife's weird hippiness.
It's that lovely idea that she's always
trying to undercut her at the same time.
You don't expect in an action film like that, which is action thriller, I suppose this is, sort of comments on different styles of parenting.
Yes.
There's this lovely idea that she's going, oh, no, we don't tell the children what to do we? What we do is make their own decisions, and oh, for crying out loud. It's all that sort of stuff.
Different but styles
like
of parenting.
It's like suddenly a bit of a sitcom was suddenly in the middle of an action thriller.
Which does make it more interesting.
Yeah.
And if
good
it was,
light relief, actually, because it could have been a pure
but it's not too action heavy. I mean, there's sort of a couple of shootouts, but they're more incidental to the sort of development of thing, which is what makes it an interesting film. But yeah, it has its flaws, but it was also very watchable.
I
think it's just slightly unusual.
Yeah,
it's slightly unusual take on an action-y thriller type film. Is that the lot?
Which is the lot, which leads us to Desert Island Flicks, which is going to be best
killer film.
The Kid Killers.
Yes.
Or Killer Kid.
Killer Kid.
Based on Hannah. Of course, if Hannah's the daughter of Eric Banner, she's Hannah Banner. what's it going to be?
My first choice, I'm fairly sure she doesn't actually kill anyone, but she kind of wants to.
Job description.
Is she even a child?
No. Well, I'm going to go for the born identity. I'm going for Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman in Dracula. Is that wrong?
Yeah. Mrs. Brown.
I'm
going
to go for Beethoven.
Transformers. Leon. The professional for American Viewers. With Natalie Portman brilliant. What a soul. One of her best roles, probably.
Yes.
I mean, she's done good things since, of course, but yeah.
No, it's a great film.
But I'm fairly sure she doesn't actually kill anyone, but wants to, but doesn't actually get around to it.
I don't know.
I don't think, because I think anyone she's about to kill, Leon kills.
Yeah.
So, But she would. She would give him the chance. Yeah, exactly. And it's a brilliant film, so I'm going with Leon.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Write in and complain if you disagree, and we'll just ignore you. Yeah. But sorry if you're massively offended by that.
I think the film that really fits the job description would be Kick-Ass.
Yes, very true.
Yeah, Hit Girl.
Known in America is Kick-Ass **. But
really?
Ironically, if you stop just before the **, you get Kick-Ass.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then that would be Kick-Ass, which isn't quite the same.
Kick-Ass.
As you like it. As you like it.
Judged by Kenneth Branagh. Well, that is on Thor. Well,
But yes, Chloe Moretz, is that?
Yes. She was in something else, really. I don't know whether Kick-Ass was made a little while ago, or just she's that age where she grows up fast, but she was in something where she seemed to be like double her height.
Oh, really?
Just looks a lot more grown up than she did in Kick-Ass, which is like only a year ago. Mm. Very bizarre.
And released a year ago. When was it filmed?
No, exactly. But probably a year before that, and that's 2 years is a long time in teenage girl land. Mm. Very good film.
Good. I'm going to go for a Jodie Foster film, The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane.
Yes, and which, I hadn't heard of this.
Good film. It's a 70s film. It's when she was doing her whole Taxi Driver, Bugsy Malone kind of era. Right. When she was young, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
And she just plays this girl who, I think parents are mostly absent, and it's mostly set in a house. It's kind of a bit like a play almost.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's kind of a horror thriller. Thriller, I suppose, than horror. But the fact that there's one or two guys who are trying to get at her in her house.
Mm.
So it's kind of Home Alone, but serious. And she does, I think, do some killing. So it ticks those boxes.
Fair enough.
And it's very good. And she's a very good actress in it. So, in it. I'm talking now like Attack the Block. Blap, blap, blap.
Where does blap come from, anyway?
I think it's better be like the gun sound.
Guns don't go blap.
They do when they get the ones that have got the bit of, like, you know, it's a pow, isn't it? I think of the ones that have got the little bit
with little flags that come out.
Little flags, little material that says blap.
It says blap.
That's what they do nowadays. You go to a kid's party shop, they go, they don't go bow, they go plap. Come on. You know.
Bow and plap.
Bow and plap.
It's a spoonerism.
It's a CBeebies character, bow and plap. They go around with guns. It's
the new character in Transformers 3.
Let's leave it there. Yes, I think we've bantered on most things and our time is up.
Yes. But yeah, but do let us know your thoughts. Movie Banter, or podcast at moviebanter.co.uk, or tweet us at moviebanter, or follow us on Facebook, which I think may be Facebook/moviebanter, or might not be.
Try it.
I don't know. If you just search Movie Banter, we'll be on there.
Yeah.
Good. Sounds good.
As yours. And let us know your thoughts on anything, really.
And I want your thoughts on what we should do for our 100th birthday.
Yeah. Oh, yes, very true. 100th centenary.
That landmark.
Yes. It's our 10,000th film. podcast. That's
another day.
It's a long way away. We'll get there eventually.
Well, till then.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.